man. So, unfortunately for you guys, you get me solo this time around, but that is okay. This was one crazy-ass episode. So, guys, welcome to How to Get Away with Law, an unofficial podcast for the hit ABC show, How to Get Away with Murder. And this episode, season 2, episode 11, called She Hates Us. And this was, this was an episode. All right, before I get into my opinions, let's go ahead and get into the recap. The recap will be brought to us by www.ew.com. Now, maybe we can help each other. Wouldn't that be nice? To just help each other after all this horribleness? LOL. Victim's Mother of the Week. I admire your heartwarming message. I admire your heartwarming message of amnesty and transitive compassion, but know your audience and the series regulars whose lives your emotional suggestions palpably mirror. The second How to Get Away with Murder after the winter hiatus dare to dangle the backwashed Gatorade that is forgiveness in front of the Keating House of Histrionic Horrors. The story of the mother of a slain teen who readily forgave her son's killer is an emotionally tempting court case that forces each murderer and murderess in our merry gang to look inward and consider whether they, too, could abandon their grudges against one another and move forward. Some epiphanies in an adjacent to the Keating Five are less dramatic than others. On the lightest level, there's Asher, forced to realize that he may be overstaying his welcome at Connor's and Oliver's house. There's Michaela, still shunned by Caleb, forced to contemplate whether she'll allow him to treat her like the only wrongdoer anymore. There's Nate, who won't make amends with Annalise and only passingly shows interest in tracking down Philip, who remains on the lam and in Canada. As usual, it's the nightmare vaudeville act of Wes and Annalise that can't seem to let the damage go. Both are under visible mental duress and both are recommended by doctors to seek therapy, except only Wes becomes legally obligated to after he makes a flippant remark about suicide. They lock him up in the psych ward for a 120-hour hold, and as Wes needlessly recounts the story of his life's greatest trauma, fighting his mother in a pool of blood after school when he was 12, the doctor tries to get him to say that Annalise is the reason because seeing her in a pool of blood triggered his memory. LOL again. As if a pool of blood was a big deal on this show. Wouldn't it be delightful if a mere pool of blood, arguably a penny in How to Get Away with Murder currency, were the reason Wes is drudging up his horrible childhood memory? Obviously, it's because Annalise dared to mutter, "Christoph," which I'm just going to declare is Wes's real name from now on, unless a libel rep for the Givens family comes after me. After tonight's episode, the narrative of Wes's mother's suicide, the unseen murder night of the season's back half, essentially, is no longer a complete mystery. The pieces are beginning to fall into place thanks to flashbacks from Annalise's life 10 years ago. Back in the early 2000s, when S Club 7 was blasting on the radio and Annalise was pregnant with Sam's baby, we're offered a novel peek into her professional and home life. She's untenured, but running her practice out of her house, and she's got her own bizarre version of the Keating Five. And guess who's the top student? Our very own Bonnie, cosplaying as Paris Geller, cosplaying as Rory Gilmore. This double Gilmore Girls reference is due to my current first time binging and general enthusiasm at seeing a young Lisa Wheel torment the very tormentable Alexis Bledel. Bonnie is obviously on her way to becoming the alpha female who wins a spot on Annalise's staff, and if she's lucky, a spot near Sam Keating's Winterbottom. Frank's in the flashback too, with a miserable haircut and an even more miserable position as Annalise's inept assistant. He botches booking airfare for Annalise's trip to Cleveland because Sam told him to wait, suggesting the first cryptic hint of Frank's dangerous obedience to Sam that resulted in Lila's murder in season 1. And yes, there's a good old Sam Keating as well, living and well and strong-jawed and making frequent comments about his excitement and concern for his future son with Annalise. How does all this relate to Wes and his mother? That chance playground encounter we saw last week between Annalise and Rose seems to have been a maneuver by Annalise to find and befriend the woman who has some connection to a federal case that Annalise has undertaken on Sam's advice. When a very pregnant Annalise travels to Cleveland to meet with Rose, she reveals a folder with a news article about a hedge fund heir named Charles Mahoney, who is on trial for murder. Rose immediately freaks out, and Annalise promises she won't let Rose or Westoff get hurt. LOL, free. It's pretty obvious that Wes's mother died because Annalise dragged her into a case she either had nothing to do with or had everything to do with. The question is more whether she took her own life or someone took it for her. As for making amends, Annalise is moved to tears by her first court case back. It involves a teenager who admitted to murder in search of forgiveness from the victim's mother. I don't mean to undersell the importance of this finely acted case, arguably the series' best acted to date, but its message of the court system racism was not given as much attention as its message of accepting responsibility and repairing damage. Annalise, inspired by the display of humanity on both sides of the trial, and left abandoned by the Keating Five after they learned she did nothing to get Wes out of his involuntary psych ward hold, decides to come clean herself to Wes. She drops off a folder of intel about the Mahoney case on Wes's doorstep, essentially beginning the process of owning up to whatever the F she did to cause his mother's death. The plight of the court case also moves the rest of the Keating Five to reconsider how they've kept each other at inaccessible distances despite sharing such trauma. Normal classmates slash murderers might turn to each other for solace or Starbucks runs, but the Keating Five have all pushed each other away. So much so that very rare sighting of all five in a car driving Wes home from the psych ward is as awkward and uncomfortable as it is beautiful. Necessary. Maybe it's the addition of jovial Asher to Murder, Inc. that has forced the group to confront the feelings they refuse to talk about. They don't exactly hash out their emotions, but they do acknowledge that maybe they ought to turn to each other in the future. But Kayla suggests they all need therapy, and Asher oozes out, "No, we don't, because we got each other." So the Keating Five essentially moves forward, and Nate moves forward with Annalise showing up at her doorstep with comfort food. And Annalise even moves forward with forgiving Bonnie, perhaps not so much out of a merit as out of a general assumption that neither frenemy can truly live without the other, like Harry and Voldemort or cookies and diets. Bonnie's reinstatement as the Bonnie means the extraction of Laurel, though who's still carrying the burden of being blamed for shooting Annalise and who's now been let loose by her own boss. She takes it out on Frank, channeling her anger into a lecture about his refusal to tell her the truth about anything. She admits that Wes shot Annalise and solicits him to reveal any secrets he's keeping from her, since nothing could possibly be any worse than Frank drugging Catherine and dumping her into the woods. LOL 4. Laurel's almost at the door when Frank blurts out, "I killed Lila." So, yeah, that's fun. If you add Floral's renaissance, then it seems that the gang is finally on the upswing after hitting collective rock bottom at the Halfstall Mansion. Forgiveness has been awarded and grudges have been resolved, save for the inevitably tense Wes Annalise reconnection and inevitably sexy face-to-face and likely other things to face rekindling between Nate and Annalise. But it's only natural that everything will fall back into peaceful place when Connor gets an email with a shaky video from the night of the fancy mansion, featuring the entire cast running through the woods covered in blood, the ostensible filmmakers Philip, and next week. Preview suggests he's craving a meaty ransom for the video. The question you must ask yourself, how much longer can you tolerate the Halfstall case? Do you care what happens to Philip or Catherine? Do you remember ADA Sinclair? On a more somber note, back in the 2000s, what impending doom is coming for Annalise that results in the loss of her baby? Does it have something to do with traveling back and forth from Cleveland on a case Sam is making her take on? On a perhaps less somber note, why was Wes' name ever Kristoff? Who did the hedge fund heir murder? How is Rose involved? Where in the world is Carmen Fonka Jensen? Well, thank you, WWW. www.ew.com. I think that was a really good recap. What do you think? Okay, so maybe I'll address some of these questions that were posed in this article. But first, I want to go and just, all right, where am I going to start? Okay, maybe I'll start with the flashback. So, all right, so 10 years. Interesting crew. Maybe I just find the crew of people, they obviously were supposed to be background because the only important person was Bonnie, who did look super frumpy. And I've heard from more than one person, of course, something reminiscent of Paris from Gilmore Girls. I did not get up that far into the season to ever see Lisa Will on Gilmore Girls, but I did watch Gilmore Girls, so I have some idea, but okay. Apparently she was frumpy then. Whatever. Anyway, so what I am to gather is that at this point in time, Sam was apparently Bonnie's therapist. That's what it sounded like later on in the episode when Bonnie comes into Annalise's office and Annalise was talking to a recorder and she was having pains. Bonnie told her to lay on her side and they had that whole discussion about how Sam was helping her. So I'm starting to think at maybe that was the point where Bonnie got the D. I know when I was talking to Adina last week and asked her, at any point did Bonnie get the D? And that's why she was so hooked on Sam. Or maybe she actually didn't get it and she just had some sort of attachment to Sam and she was always attracted to Sam, but she still had some sort of guilt attachment to Annalise or something. I don't know. Maybe we'll get a little farther into that, but at least we have some background as to knowing that Bonnie has been there a while and apparently was one of Annalise's students, so that is helpful to see. And also, one of the important details, we can see Sam look like a very loving husband who was super excited to be having a son. But there was something else that I noticed that was really just a little scary. It seemed that Annalise had some sort of premonition that she was going to lose this child. And I don't know if it was that she had any kind of indication that she had, I don't know if she figured she was going to lose the kid, that she just felt something in her soul, or that she knew anything about her health, or just something in her past, or maybe she just had some feeling in the back of her mind that positively, somehow, some way, she was going to lose this kid, because there was just something about the way she acted this entire time, that just something that was in her, like she just had an intuition, like she was just lose this child. And I guess one of the indications when she was talking about how she wasn't feeling good and she was saying maybe the baby's already dead or something like that, she did make that comment, and it just was really weird. But I don't know, there's something really daunting about that. And what I got from that is pretty much what could have torn their entire marriage apart probably had to do something with the loss of the baby, and that probably shattered their marriage pretty hard. So, I don't know, we'll see, but when you lose a child, that could do some serious damage to your mental state and can definitely destroy a marriage. So, that's going to be my guess there, but that's as far as I can speculate. But one of the other things about the past, so I guess Christoph was Wes's name. Oh, jeez, Christoph. And the recap that I read was right. Christoph? I don't know. I know Rose obviously has an accent, so she's foreign. I don't know. It does not sound like a name that I'm not gonna judge Christoph. Maybe it's good that we went with Wes, but whatever this attachment was, I don't think the hedge fund guy was Wes's dad, but I wonder what the connection is, and I wonder why Annalise felt it was so important to jump into this woman's life and try to save her, and what went wrong in that case that this woman had to kill herself And if she actually indeed kill herself, or I don't know if I can speculate and say that it was set to look like a suicide, maybe. I don't know. But when we see the other flashback, when Rose shows up to the coffee house and Annalise gives her the folder, and she looks at the clipping of the hedge fund manager Mahoney is on trial for murder, and she just gets ready to get up and is just saying, "Who are you?" And she says, "I'm a lawyer." I was just like, oh no. Okay, so Annalise is over here trying to be a warrior and obviously had not been asked, and I guess, you know, Sam was involved in this too, but I mean, I can see why Annalise has taken it upon herself to help Wes out, because she's probably feeling some serious deep-seated guilt for getting his mom killed. So that's obviously why he's been the special child. But special child, because of special treatment, is now especially annoying. So we're going to go ahead and jump into 10 years forward, start the episode. Wes here, oh gosh, I know he is going through a hard time. If you have shot your professor, somebody you've been through hard times with, there's all this crap that's going on, and he shows up trying to get some sleeping pills because he has not been able to sleep. He's been through all this crap, finds out that Annalise said, oh yeah, Rebecca's been dead, and he can't get the sleeping pills, and he's like, okay, well, you know, since I can't get sleeping pills, then fine, well, just don't feel bad when I shoot myself. I'm like, thanks, okay, right, okay, so I don't know what he thought was going to happen if you're in a place with a doctor and you say flippant things like that, but okay, so I'm just thinking, oh, what an idiot, whatever, Wes is driving me insane. So he starts that off, and already he's pissing me off. And poor Laurel, I mean, she's trying to just try to keep everybody together, and everything's just falling apart for that poor girl in this situation. I also felt bad for her trying to come in, and this resident that's trying to help Wes out is a smart cookie right there. When Laurel tries to sneak out and tells Frank to cover for her, and tries to help Wes out, and Laurel busts out the lawyer speak. Can you really actually hold somebody in there? And just say, oh, we can hold this person in here for 120 hours, and then you can file this suit. Is it really 120 hours? I don't know. I didn't have time to look that up. I now do 2 podcasts, so I didn't really have time to research and bust out the law terms, so forgive me this half of the season if I don't bust out the law terms. I don't even know if you even cared if you like those. I don't even know if you like this podcast. Whatever. But I thought that was a little unfortunate. But whatever. Laurel does not get him any help, and we'll see what kind of drama that is later. And so I'll just go ahead and jump into the case, and we'll get into the fallout later with the entire group. But the case was what killed me in this entire thing. And I have some serious mixed feelings about this case, because the woman who played the mom, I mean, that woman can jerk some emotion out of your soul with everything. There's just this young man who killed her son, and her concern is that she wants to help rehabilitate this young man who has killed her son. But what I appreciate about this woman is she is willing to admit this is incredibly selfish. And I'm a Christian woman, but I appreciate when they didn't trot out the same storyline that, you know, Jesus loves him and wants to save his soul, where, you know, I appreciate that. That's something that I would believe is a good thing. But what she was willing to say out loud was, I'm selfish, and I want to do this for me, because I don't want to spend the rest of my life having to deal with this and having to carry this sadness, and I want to help you because this will help me, and I want to help you. And she's willing to admit that. So her entire plan is she wants to get him a lesser sentence so she can help get him rehabilitated. And of course, this is shocking to me. She's busting this out in the courtroom and interrupting things so they can get another hearing. And I'm just thinking, where the hell is this case going to go? What the heck am I watching? And I mean, finding out that this kid ended up sending a text message from the dead boy's phone saying, oh, I found a ride, just so that the mom wouldn't come and try to find him. And he sent L-U-V instead of L-O-V-E, which, you know, I appreciate him. Like, her now deceased son at least knew how to use the English language when he texted. See, it's possible. I do it. Jeez. Like, come on. You only have to add one extra letter, so might as well spell it correctly. And to find that out, and then he seemed like he was going to get through that lie, and Annalise looked like she was just struggling hard. I mean, you know, she's gotten through a lot of cases where they've done terrible things and killed people, but it looks like she was struggling. She was just like, come on, let's finish this stupid hearing and just go ahead and try to get through, to say you're sorry, you know, you want to get rehabilitated, whatever. Just don't admit it, even though she could see the mom was crying, but he couldn't do it. I mean, I don't know if I could hold up with the way that, she's like award-winning crying, like all her emotion there, and he just said, no, I'm sorry, I shot him on purpose. And the text I sent, and when mom said his last words to me were from you, I watched that episode twice, and I'll probably have to watch it again with my mom. And, like, both times I was just like, oh, man, tears are about to come out because, I mean, maybe I'm just close to PMS. I have no idea, but there's just something about it. It was just really rough. And then so the other lawyer's like, oh, I'm just, now that I've got this information, I'm just straight going to up the charge. I was like, what a heartless human being. But at the same time, you got to look at it from the other side that, you know, why wouldn't you want to up it? This guy just admitted, nope, shot this dude in cold blood, and I meant to do it. So, of course, you know, they're thinking, psh, this guy meant to take this person's life, so I could not blame the other lawyer for wanting to do that. And then we get in the court, and we do all this appealing about we have a system where somebody of color gets in the courtroom. They were raised in a crappy situation in a country that allows you to have a gun. And I'm over here gun rights and all that good stuff in a country that allows you to have a gun. I'm like, oh my goodness, now we're going to blame it on the gun. But whatever, we won't get into that. But Annalise makes an appeal that this is the time to break the cycle. And I'm not sure if I agree with the recap that we shouldn't harp on that point. I think it was made pretty sharply, and they did it, I think, just right. They ramped up the emotion just right to say, hey, you know, maybe we should be thinking about this instead of just constantly just trying to end people's lives just immediately, especially like this kid looked like he knew what he was doing, and every time he looked into that woman's eyes, it looked like a part of him was just constantly just dying. Like, his decision was just, like, he knew he had messed up, and, I mean, oh, that kid. Like, he knew he'd messed up, and he can't take that back. And finally, he was just, when they decided, okay, well, maybe we won't go for the death penalty, how about life? And he was like, no, I'll go ahead and take that. And then you get the last heart-wrenching scene where the mom was saying, you know, I'll be there, here's my number. And I was thinking, you know, it's the right decision that he would have to spend time in prison. He did. He needs to take the punishment for taking a life from somebody willingly, because you just can't take somebody's life, especially since it wasn't like the other man slept with his girlfriend, he said. But he didn't come in. It wasn't like the other guy threatened his life. He took the other guy's life willingly, so he deserves the punishment. But he did have an unfair upbringing, but the one silver lining is, out of this, he did get a mom, and Doesn't look like he had one to begin with, but I guess that's the only silver lining. At least have somebody that's, and I can tell that woman looks like she's going to love the hell out of that guy, even though he took her son's life. But I mean, even if it's selfish, I feel like the two of them will at least have something. And they both lost something that night. I mean, it's his fault, but hey, I mean, if it helps the both of them somehow with what little time he has left sitting there, it's going to be crappy. You know, with his 3 meals and stuff, at least he has somebody that'll come and visit him, because, of course, you know, she doesn't have a child left, so she'll be devoting her time to him. So I thought that was an interesting story. And when I say I hated that case, I'm only saying it because I thought it was a good story. But anyway, enough about that. So we'll get back to the Keating Five and the rest. So they eventually find out, thanks to Laurel, who ends up getting fired, all because she decided to tell Annalise, hey, maybe you should go over there and talk to Wes, and you should forgive him. And then Annalise is like, psh, how dare you? You're fired. And since Bonnie's back, I don't need you. And, you know, just good on you, Laurel. I mean, Wes and Annalise need to get their shit together. They need to apologize to each other. They need to get their crap together, because everything's falling apart even worse because of the two of them. Really, a lot of stuff is spiraling out of control because the two of them just have some beef they need to settle. Because, really, Wes shot her because of her. And, I mean, he didn't, well, I'd say he didn't have to shoot her in the side, but if you tell me you've been lying to me about my girlfriend and that she was dead, and you told me to shoot you in the first place, and you tell me that, yeah, I might try to shoot you in the head or something like that. So she brought that on herself, and they just need to fix that mess. Anyway, so Laurel just goes ahead in front of the Keating Five, says, hey, well, Annalise knows Wes is in the psych ward. And so they finally ditch out and say, fine, Annalise has shown her true colors. So they go to find Wes, and of course Michaela's telling the person at the front desk, the usual lawyer stuff, we're going to sue you. And of course, while Wes was in there, talks to the nurse resident who seems to have, she seems to be able to tell when people are lying. At first I was thinking she was digging a little too far with Annalise, but what she was making, the connection she was making is that he was triggered. His memory of his mom's suicide was triggered by Annalise being shot, whatever. We had to go through that story again. But he gets released, and, you know, I guess the murderous Keating Five, get to sit in the car and talk about their crappy life together, how they're not really friends, and they're going to be tied together forever by all their trauma and drama. And poor Asher admits that he heard Connor and Michaela and Oliver talking about, you know, how they just kind of tolerate him and all that stuff. And this group of people is just forever going to be tied to each other because of all this crap, but I'm not sure they're ever going to be friends. And just all the mess that this group is. And all with that, Annalise decides she wants to drop off the files to Wes, which I'm hoping that we don't have any predictions that Wes is ever going to read that, and by the season finale decide to take all of his sleeping pills at once and try to kill himself. I'm going to lose it if that happens. And I can see already from the previews for next week that somehow stupid Caleb is still in the picture, even though he called Michaela like a whore and she called him a whore back. But he definitely deserved that because he whipped that out first, and I'm real tired of his whiny ass face. And the scene that I just threw my hands in the air, even though I knew it was coming, was of course Laurel saying, you know, okay, tell me secrets. I just told you that I did not shoot Annalise. Wes did tell me, and I just was thinking, oh God, he's gonna tell her. He's gonna tell her that I killed Lila. And I was thinking, why would you do that? Because then you have to go through the whole tangled web and say, well, I had to kill Lila because Sam wanted me to, and then I'd want to say, okay, why would you have killed Lila? What would be your motivation? And he'd have to explain why the heck he had to do it for Sam, and I need to still know why. What the heck favor did he owe Sam to have to do that? I need to know that. But then, what else could he have told Laurel? He can't say, well, I had to bury Rebecca's dead body. Because how is he going to figure that one out? That one's a little too fresh, and she's still a little too close to Wes for him to tell her that. So, I mean, what choice did he have? I mean, they're falling for each other, and I don't know what Laurel's reaction is going to be if she's a smart one, so she's going to have to keep that under wraps if she loves him. But how in the heck is she going to get in bed with him after that? I mean, it's different being friends with murderers, but having to get nice and comfy in bed with one, I don't know how I'm going to be able to take that one. I mean, she rolls around with murderers, but she's not actually one who's actually been the one who was firsthand murdering somebody yet. So I don't know how we're going to deal with that one. And of course, Philip obviously is going to be the one who has to be killed next. But wouldn't that be a little too predictable? I feel like he's going to have to be the person that might need to hang over into season 3. Even though that'd be a pain in the ass. He's kind of weird looking. But I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But I can only ramble on so far and not bore the hell out of you guys. So let me go ahead and cut myself off. All right. Well, guess we'll see tomorrow night, guys. Until then, peace out. See what the next episode brings. Reach out to the podcast on Twitter at getawaywithlaw. Send an email to Gmail. howtogetawaywithlaw@gmail.com. Search out the Facebook group. Just search out How to Get Away with Law. And go to iTunes and leave a review and a comment.